Tri-Cities region, get ready. Arctic air is invading the area.
Yeah, Storm Team 11 meteorologists warn you, you should be prepared for dangerously cold temperatures. Thanks for choosing News Channel 11 on ABC Tri-Cities. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Sarah Diamond. Storm Team 11 Chief Meteorologist Mark Reynolds is in your corner analyzing the latest weather data. It's going to bring some wickedly cold air our way.
Yeah, let's get right to him in our storm center. Hey, Mark.
Hey there, guys. That certainly is true. We're watching this cold front. It's now making its way through parts of Kentucky and West Virginia. And yes, there are a few snow showers along with it. Take a look, though, at our current temperatures. Most of East Tennessee's surrounding area is still in the 30s, but we're watching the very cold air on our doorstep. And as you look at this, I do want to point out there's a little bit of light snow there in the areas of Kentucky and West Virginia. That activity seems to slowly be pushing southward. That's in association with the front itself. Just amazing. And just to show you how cold the temperatures are, there's our current readings as we expand the view. Look at that very cold air. We're in the teens across the Ohio Valley, single digits already in Chicago and Davenport. We do have wind advisories in effect for the mountainous terrain as we're looking at that possibility for some strong winds over the mountains of East Tennessee, and not so much East Tennessee, but Western North Carolina. That comes in effect after midnight tonight. And again, we'll continue to watch that possibility, not only high winds, but dangerously cold wind chill factors. By tomorrow morning, guys, some of the higher elevations could see wind chills to 3 below in the mountains of North Carolina. The rest of us, anywhere from 5 to 10. How's that? Get ready for it. It's coming.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Should the weather force schools to change their schedules, you can get up-to-the-minute information on our website, WJHL.com. And while you're there, you can sign up to receive text alerts for your school system.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're here in Jamaica, Queens, New York, where it is freezing. You're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is JDR, live on your iTunes, your iOS, your Android. Dominic.com. John Rosen at writerscafe.org and Tawaquan at your-poetry.com. We're also on SoundCloud. Pinterest. And we tweet. Let me tell you, I went out a couple times, man, and it was just so cold. I couldn't believe it. It was just, and I decided I wouldn't go nowhere today. Nowhere. I'm just going to sit here and stare at the television and do my classwork and whatever, and that's it. So anyway, sit back.
This morning in the federal hate crimes trial of Dylann Roof. The jury could start deliberating later today. Roof is accused of killing the pastor of that church and 8 parishioners in Charleston in June of 2015. He has confessed to the shootings. He confessed during his interrogation. He is facing the death penalty. Yesterday, the jury and the public heard that chilling 911 call for the first time.
Please answer.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
Please, Emmanuel Church, there's plenty of people shot down here. Please send somebody right away.
Emmanuel Church?
Emmanuel Amy, 110 Calhoun.
And there's people shot?
Yeah, he shot the pastor, he shot all the men in the church. Please come right away.
Okay, my partner's going to be getting some help on the way while I get a little bit more information from you, okay? Stay on the line with me. Are he's you safe? In, are you...
He's still in here, I'm afraid. He's still in here.
MSNBC's Mariana Atencio is outside the courthouse in Charleston for us this morning. What was the reaction inside that courtroom when that tape was played yesterday?
Craig, I could still see family members of victims sobbing as the jury was dismissed in that courtroom yesterday. Hearing the fear in Polly Shepherd's voice during that 911 call, Dylan Roof still in the building, has to be one of the most emotionally taxing moments of this trial. Yesterday after court, I spoke to the father of Tuansa Sanders. He was the 26-year-old who died that night. And he said one of the hardest things about being in court was the fact that Dylan Roof showed no emotion. He told me it's frustrating that it seems that he doesn't care. And you can understand why it was so hard for this father, because there's a moment in the tape, Craig, when you can hear someone saying Tuansa and the sound of moaning. Mm. Happening in the courtroom now, closing arguments underway. Now, remember, this is not a murder trial. This is a hate crimes trial. So the federal prosecutor is arguing why he thinks Dylan Roof did this out of hate. He's talking about that church being a place of safety, a place where the pastor, Clementa Pinckney, could take his daughter and Felicia Sanders could take her granddaughter. And this is what he said in closing arguments now, Craig. Hatred had no place in that sanctuary, but hatred came to those tables just the same. He went on to call Dylan Roof a man of tremendous cowardice who targeted the defenseless and referenced 87-year-old Susie Jackson, who walked with a cane. The prosecutor said he shot the most vulnerable the most times.
It was very interesting to me yesterday that the defense didn't even bother calling a single witness after Polly Shepherd testified. The defense attorney walks to her on the stand and simply says, I'm sorry. No questions. Mariana Atencio for us in Charleston this morning. Mariana, thank you so much.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want to keep up to date with the videos we're putting out, you can click subscribe just below me or click over on this list to see lots of other great videos.
And hey, let me tell you, you're listening to Views with a Twist, 1216. My name is JDR, and I am glad that I have to say that I'm kind of confused because I'm a criminal justice student, and I've also been. I passed the school safety test, and now they want to bring me in for an interview, and I'm deciding whether or not I'm going to do that. It's kind of late in life for me, and I would love to work. It's the NYPD, and I would love to work with the NYPD. I would just love to do that. So I think I'm just going to go to the interview anyway, I'm just going to go there. But anyway, it's good that, they convicted this kid. And in his sentencing, from what I understand, he is going to represent himself. And you know the old saying, the person that represents themselves has a fool for an attorney. So this kid's going down whether or not. But you know, like I said in the beginning, I'm confused. I want to know this kid's background. I want to know just what this kid is coming from, where this is coming, where this came from. You know, I want to know all of this. I want to know what's happening here, because, you know, you sentence a kid that what he did was heinous. There's no excuse. I'm not trying to make any excuses. It is what it is. You know, the kid's the devil, whatever you want to say. I just want to know where it all started. That's what I want to know. I want to know where it all started. I think that's very important. Views with a Twist, 12/16. iTunes, Android, iOS, Podomatic.com, SoundCloud, Pinterest. I'll be back.
A rare quiet became another day of war, shattering a ceasefire only hours after it started, and crushing a bit of hope that the agony of Aleppo was over. Especially for those still trapped in what's left of their homes in the east of the city.
Oh my god.
All the people were, let's say, psyched and happy with the agreement about leaving and evacuating the city, finally. And they were just preparing themselves, and they think that the regime is going to take a ground for them.
Good morning, my friends. Tens of shells are raining down on the besieged areas in Aleppo. There are injured in the field hospitals, injured as a result of the bombardment by the regime forces and allied Iranian militias.
And yet, before first light, the green government buses had pulled up to the edges of East Aleppo. That was the deal. They waited and waited. Rebel fighters and their families were to board these buses, bearing the flag and the face of the man they fought for 4 years, to be taken to an area still in opposition hands. But the deal brokered by Russia and Turkey broke down. President Assad's ally, Iran, imposed more conditions. This could take time. A people displaced and dispossessed are desperate to end this anguish. In recent weeks, more than 100,000 escaped the front lines of East Aleppo. Many did not. The UN is raising concern about alleged massacres of civilians by pro-government forces. A grave accusation dismissed today by President Assad.
If we liberate Aleppo from the terrorists, there would be, the Western officials and the mainstream media, they're going to be worried about the civilians. They're not worried when the opposite happens, when the terrorists killing those civilians.
His forces have their enemy cornered. But these latest pictures from the Syrian army show they're not yet ready to give up this fight. And the rebels are pushing back. Lise Doucette, BBC News, Beirut.
cautious, I'm here. Step away from the window and go back to sleep. Safe from pain and truth and choice and the poison devils. See, they don't give a fuck about you like I do.
Yeah, you just heard Perfect Circle. You're listening to Views with a Twist. 1216, my name is GDR, live on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, Podomatic.com, David Robinson at Writers.org, Tawakwan at YourPoetry-.com. We're also on Pinterest and SoundCloud. And that was just a sad segment because, you know, unless you've been living in a shell, you know what has been going on in Aleppo and what has gone on in the last couple of days when these refugees were basically guaranteed an exodus, a way out, suddenly they get bombarded as they're on their way out. War is such a sucky thing. The want of power. It's crazy. I can understand when people protest against government because governments suck. But then on the other hand, if you didn't have a government, you'd probably just have mass chaos. If you didn't have a government, you'd probably have a dictator. Because somebody has to take control. Because, you just got a bunch of mad people running around. But the way when I think of Assad, he's a dictator that knows his power is leaving, but he wants to hold on to it. And he's like a jealous boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever, a jealous partner. If I can't have you, nobody can. That's the way he's doing it. The refugee, hey, you can leave. They're on their way out, and all of a sudden, they get bombarded. What's going through the mind of a person that does that? That's in charge of that. Yeah. And you heard Perfect Circle. I'll be back.
Well, we love animals. I remember we always had a dog. One day I was going down to see my father, and I may have been eighth grade, maybe freshman, and I walked by this place, and I saw this poor dog out in the blazing sun and chained to a stake in the ground, and I couldn't see any water around.
Seeing that dog suffer was meaningful to Senator Dole, and I think began his path to wanting to protect animals the rest of his life.
It's just been a part of his life. He's been very much on top of animal welfare issues throughout his entire career.
Senator Dole is deserving of the Presidential Service Award for his lifetime of work for animals and for the ASPCA. In the 70s and in the 80s, Senator Dole introduced successfully legislation to protect farm animals, to protect laboratory animals, to protect dogs and cats. And that work that he began then has continued to this very day.
I've continued after I left Congress to make animal welfare one of my top priorities.
Having Senator Dole in our corner has been a tremendous asset for the ASPCA. His credibility on the Hill is unparalleled. When Senator Dole calls, members of Congress pick up the phone and they listen. Having Senator Dole at the Capitol Hill adoption events is a boon to the organization. Senator Dole attracts more people, and more people means more adoptions.
This past February, when Bob and I were at the ASPCA event on Capitol Hill, he just fell in love with a little dog named Franklin. And I feel certain if there had been no adoption that we would have had Franklin as a third dog. I used to take Leader, who was our first dog. I'd take him to the Department of Transportation where I served as secretary. And then he also, I went with Bob to Capitol Hill and to his Senate office.
So he would stay up in the mail room with a lady named Ruth Ann Comark, and she would put a sign on the door that said, "The Leader is in."
His whole life has been lived for others, making a difference, a positive difference for others. And I think he's a man who feels, you know, so important to be humble and to really to have a mission feel where you can make a difference. That's the point of life in his view.
I felt I had a responsibility when I knew how animals were treated to help do things that would help that animal or animals. I never sat back and said, boy, am I proud of myself. Proud's not the word, but I'm very pleased that I had so many opportunities to work on different pieces of legislation that made a difference for animals.
Yeah, hey, folks, you're listening to GDR, Views with a Twist. And you just heard Bob Dole, who is a, you know, Bob Dole's a nice person, man. You know, I never had anything against Bob Dole. Didn't want him as president, but, you know, I thought he was a nice guy. And he's a great animal advocate. And, you know, there are people out there that really go that extra mile to help an animal. For example, I was just reading on Yahoo, I think it was. I have it on my Facebook page, John Robinson at Facebook. There was a guy, a train conductor. It was a train conductor. He found a cat frozen, and I guess the cat, I don't know if the cat was frozen in water, it was frozen, and he took the cat and brought the cat back to life, you know, and adopted the cat. That's the bottom line of the story. There's a little bit more to it. From what I understand, the guy couldn't understand why the cat was still living, because the cat was in the freight car for 12 hours
while this train traveled 400 miles. So, yeah. And he found the cat, and he brought the cat back to life, and, you know, some people are calling it a miracle. You know, it's... You know, hey, call it what you want. I'm just happy, because I'm an animal lover, I'm just happy that there are people like that, you know. And I don't know if you've been paying attention, there's this whole thing that's been going on, because in Harlem, there's a deer in Jackie Robinson Park. Jackie Robinson Park, I think it's called. Is it Jackie Robinson Park? I don't know. Yeah, it's a park over there. And there's been a deer there for, like, 3 weeks, I think. And they've been trying to figure out how the deer even got there. They're saying it swam. I think it swam. It swam. You know, from one area to the other, or it, you know, went, like, through highways and stuff. And the thing was, or the thing is that Mayor de Blasio wants to put the deer down because, you know, he's saying, you know, we can't transport the deer from one state to another state. Thank God Cuomo stepped in and said, listen, this isn't happening. What's going on here? And then they found out that no such law exists. There's no such law that prohibits Mayor de Blasio to transport that deer from one state to another state and let that deer out in a forest somewhere. There is no such law. Think about that when he wants to be reelected. Hey, at this point, I'm going to give out my shout-outs to the ASPCA, FDNY, NYPD. I hope I get the job. ASPCA, North Shore Animal League, Pet Pardons, Show Yourself Side, SOS Wildlife People, if you get the chance. Go, they have a Facebook page, go to SOS Wildlife, and just check out what they've done. Great people, great people. Everybody that listens to me, all of my Freunde in Deutschland, and yeah, I might be back, I might not be back.
Several weeks ago, actor George Peppard was here and urged citizens across the country to support a new Senate bill in favor of public financing for congressional and presidential campaigns. Today we have with us a major opponent of that bill to express the opinions of members of the House Administration Committee. Here is that committee's chairman, Democratic Congressman from Ohio, Wayne L. Hayes.
Welcome.
Congressman, why do politicians have such low credibility today?
Well, I think it's partly because there's so many problems in the world, and people are so dissatisfied, and there's so many things they want they can't aspire to, and they turn to the government, and the government doesn't satisfy them, and so they figure that
they give up.
You know, I was saying just today that there isn't a government in the free world that has a majority government. Every government in the free world is a minority government. All the European countries have minority governments. We have a divided government here, and it's and we do have terrible problems in the world, and we don't have all the solutions, as hard as we may try.
Do you think it's often the fact that those who have money get into office?
Well, I don't think that's exactly true, Mike. That's one of the reasons that I'm in favor of strict limitations on campaign spending so seats can't be bought. Let me say, when I was elected to Congress, I spent $3,000 to unseat a four-term incumbent. And I don't think money, I think the American people are too sophisticated. I don't think money will do it anymore. Look what happened to Senator Fulbright in Arkansas.
Yeah.
He spent three times as much as his opponent, but he'd been in Senate 30 years and his time was up and the people didn't want him anymore and the money wouldn't do it. I think he was a valuable senator. I've disagreed with him sharply many times, but there comes a time, and I hope I'm going to know when my time comes ahead of time and quit before I'm defeated.
30 years, though, he can't be too sad about that. No, I don't think so. Run.
That's a long time. That's a long run.
Would you ever get into politics, Muhammad?
No, sir, because, see, when you people discuss things, they're not our problems. See, I'm looking at the black people as a nation. And all of our problems, you all don't have nothing to solve them. See, we need a spiritual, divine man, and I believe Elijah Muhammad is that man. We have prostitution problems in New York City mainly, and all I see is the black sisters being used by all type men, and ain't no politicians mentions it. We got dope problems, gang fighting among self, a lack of love for self, no respect for our women. We don't have no property. We don't have no land. We worked 400 years to make this country the wealthiest country on the planet. None of you politicians talk about repaying us for the 400 years of slave labor. You're not the ones who slaved us, who lynched us or raped us, but your people stole the property and left it with you, and you still guilty because you keep it. All the TV stations, all the legislation, the Ramadians, the Holidayans, all the land, everything is yours. So ain't nothing in politics for us.
Yeah, but as a politician, couldn't you help the blacks?
No, because I got to have the white man's flag over me, and I got to represent all.
I
disagree with that, Muhammad. There are a lot of blacks in Congress, and they don't have the white man's flag.
I don't fuss at the brother on TV.
I'm not going
to fuss at the white people.
I'm going to talk to everybody here.
Well, I'm talking to them now.
Take your hand on my face. I'm going to talk to everybody here.
Let me talk to them. They're asking me questions.
I understand.
This is our problem.
I understand.
You understand? We got to get together.
We're not going to.
And I don't think politics have a problem. I'm talking to brothers.
No, but I want to change the color of the flag. I'm serious about that.
I'm not. Okay.
You talk about the flag over your head.
We going to change the color of the flag. Okay. That's a heck of a job.
Yeah. Well, it is a job.
See, now we're getting on stuff that don't make no sense. We're talking about something.
I guess it makes more sense than Betsy Ross.
I hope can look at this and see what I'm talking about. I hope the people can watch a show and see what I'm talking about.
Well, they will. They look at Mike Douglas
every day.
Black
people understand.
Black people do understand, brother.
I was saying was this, is that I don't think I can be in no office in this government and don't represent the country, which represents all the people. I'm not saying it's bad to represent all the people. I'm not saying I wouldn't want to represent all the people one day. But
what you do, man. Yeah.
But now, wait a minute.
Charity starts first at home. God helps those who help themselves. I got to help myself and clean up myself and love myself and do for myself before I can go to help others. I don't have time to help white people because there's enough white people to help white people. I don't have enough time to help no Jews. There's enough millionaire, billionaire Jews to help the Jews.
There's enough black people to help black people.
Right, so that's what we want to do.
Now you're talking. So my program is only worrying about my people first. That's what I'm saying. And I can't be in no politics saying I'm just for the black people. It's not right.
Yeah, where do you live, though, brother?
That was Sly Stone and Muhammad Ali on the Merv Griffin Show in 1974. And you heard the talk of politics. You heard what everybody was saying then in 1974. And listen to what they're saying now. Freaky. Views with a Twist, 1216, JDR. iTunes, iOS, Android. Podomatic.com. John Robinson, Writers.org. Tawakwanyo-Poetry.com, SoundCloud. Pinterest. See you later.
Thank you for letting me be myself again.